My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? I'm Laura Correnti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to one of the most important Adlandias.
Election Day. So it's November 3rd, 2020. If you haven't already dropped your ballot off, if you're not currently standing in line to vote, we ask you to please consider finding your local polling place to make your voice heard. If you need more information, go to voteforyourlife.com for more information on where you can vote today. And speaking of, we have a very contextually relevant show today, Alexa.
Christian Tom is in the Adlandia house with us today. He came off the campaign trail with Biden. He's the head of digital partnerships for Biden for president. Amazing conversation with him in a crazy, crazy time on a crazy, crazy day. And so we also paired Christian with
Kristen Mitchell. So Kristen Mitchell is founder of Nourish the People. We're going to be hanging with Kristen on the back half of this episode to talk about her experience in working with executives in the advertising, marketing, media space who are working under tight timelines and talking about what it means to take a break, to take a pause, to look inward and really create boundaries and space to really focus on our mental health and well-being. And so with that, I hope everybody has the opportunity, wherever you are listening to Adlandia today, to join us in taking a collective breath as an ad community on Election Day 2020. We'll be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back in the studio with Christian Tom, head of digital partnerships for Biden for President. Christian, welcome to Adlandia.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
So we are so excited that you said, yes, I will do a few minutes with you guys, hot from the campaign trail, and we want to get a hot take from you on what's happening. So we're recording this a week before the election. And Christian, when we were talking earlier, you were saying, yes, obviously the election's a major deadline, but in the media and campaign world, there's another major deadline happening tonight. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah. So for this audience, it'll be something that probably is closer to people's hearts or something that maybe is more interesting. We're 8 days out from Election Day, and tonight at midnight, we actually do have a big advertising and digital advertising deadline. Anything that's political in nature needs to go into Facebook and be approved by midnight tonight. Facebook is not disallowing ads running up to Election Day, but they aren't allowing any new pieces of creative, which adds an interesting challenge for people who are running again. You know, as you can imagine, huge numbers of ad units and ad groups at scale. This is the last chance to get stuff in.
I mean, for fresh messaging, that's a real challenge.
Totally. I mean, yeah, it absolutely is. And Facebook is allowing, and again, they obviously own Instagram. So on Facebook and Instagram, we and all political campaigns can continue to put out organic messaging with fresh creative and messaging through Election Day and beyond. But the paid boosting component, yeah, this is the deadline tonight.
And anyone in the media side of the world understands that, like, paid is the game, right? Paid is the game for any brand, anybody. We have this conversation internally at my company. paid is the game. So it poses like big challenges. And I think that this is an ongoing conversation way past the election that we're all going to have. So interested to have you come back post-election and talk about that and talk about what you're seeing in terms of even kind of broader impact of a decision like that, if you would. That would be amazing.
Would love to. Yeah.
Prior to joining the Biden for President campaign, you were working in a sales and partnerships capacity with Group 9. Can you talk to us about your decision to move from working in advertising sales over to a political campaign?
Yeah. So my background most directly, right, is having spent 5 years at Now This, which was in kind of more startup phase, and the Dodo, which together joined up to create Group 9 with a bunch of other media properties. So I was on the publisher side. And before that, I was at the platforms. I worked at Twitter for 4 years. I was one of the first kind of handful of employees at Twitter in the New York office. And I worked at Google at YouTube before that. So for me, the interesting kind of intersection was always video and social platforms. And then Group 9 being a publisher who's really been some of the leaders about thinking about publishing in a digital and social first way. To come to a campaign where there are not always a lot of people who come from industry, meaning who have a background similar to what I've described. There are a few people who've worked at other big publishing companies and or platforms, etc. But a lot of people, and I think this is true in most industries, come from the industry. These are people who maybe serial agency people or serial entrepreneurs. I think a lot of the people who are my colleagues now are serial campaign people. This is what they do. And they know the political world inside out. I think what is nice is, I hope what I bring is a little bit of a, therefore an outside perspective, meaning outside of politics, but a media industry first perspective.
So was there a moment, Christian, in where you decided to say, I'm going to get into the political marketing arena and bring this perspective over to the campaign?
Yeah, I mean, I was motivated enormously by the motivation I think a lot of people have, which is to get Donald Trump out of office. For me, this has actually always been a bit more than merely, I think Donald Trump is a terrible president and a bad person, actually, at his core, which I do think. It is, to me, this has always been also affirmatively the respect I've had for Joe Biden as a public servant and as someone who, at his core, is a fundamentally decent human. And I've always admired him in politics. So the opportunity as the field, meaning the Democratic primary, winnowed was one that I couldn't pass up. And this is, I think, as Joe Biden has said, truly a battle for the soul of our nation. This is a referendum on who we are as Americans. And maybe that's, you know, me biased working on the Biden campaign, coming with somewhat kind of like flowery language. But I sincerely, deeply believe that. And so it's an honor, and it was something that I've always had a great interest in terms of politics and leveraging some of the skills that I can bring to any organization and doing it here.
How did you kind of take your experience working in the marketing media industry and translate it into really creating great digital partnerships, which is your role at the Biden campaign?
Well, I guess for me, I got introduced to Rob Flaherty, who runs all the digital efforts here at the Biden campaign. And as he was building out this team, because this was I started the campaign in June, which feels like simultaneously super recent, but also a lifetime ago. And we were talking earlier, just as we were getting set up, about how this is a 24/7 job, and so it's been like a lifetime of work experience. But I got introduced to Rob, and the idea of a partnerships team is actually not a team that, from what he has shared with me, is kind of like on a presidential campaign digital normal organization or previous org. And the example he gave to me was a little bit of kind of like looking one cycle ago. So on Hillary Clinton's campaign, the idea of audience development was this novel concept. And it was kind of like, publishers have audience development teams. And the Clinton campaign in that case is acting in many ways like a publisher, at least in the digital mindset. So, hey, maybe we ought to do that. And this year in 2020, there is an audience development team, and there's been an understanding, kind of a tacit acknowledgement of how the Biden campaign needs to act like a publisher. So it's like kind of the playbook from 4 years ago becomes the default. So I think of potentially, if we do our jobs right here, the idea of a partnerships team also can become something that is part of the playbook for the next cycle.
I love that.
Are there partnerships, Christian, you can point to or talk about that would be a manifestation of bringing that media marketing mindset from outside the Beltway, if you will, into the political arena that you think represents where you see political marketing needing to go?
So the partnerships team, as we've built it, has three overall pillars. The pillars are one, net new platforms. Two, digital and actually like digital and social first publishers. And then three is creators, influencers, and kind of that side of the world. So I can give maybe an example in each category that illustrates, I think, exactly what you're describing. So so in the platform side, part of what we're thinking about here is not our owned channels, meaning a place where you'll have an at Joe Biden or an at Kamala Harris. And in fact, I just mentioned we have an audience development team. Their whole job is to publish content on our channels to grow our audiences there, to think about what's an engagement that makes sense on those platforms and communicate effectively. So that's what our audience development team does, and they do it exceptionally well. The whole idea of this partnerships team is as much as possible to get off of our own channels. How do we grow our reach by meeting people where they are and actually putting ourselves outside of the at Joe Biden equivalent? So two platforms that are really different, but that illustrate that. One of them is a partnership that we put together with Cameo. So Cameo, for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's a platform, right? It's a place where they've created a marketplace where buyers and sellers can meet, the buyers being individual people. And the sellers, in this case, if you will, are the celebs, the influencers who are able to offer up for anywhere, I think, from like $15 or $50 to a few hundred or maybe a few thousand dollars, a shout out, video recorded on their phones in their own homes. And you may have it for Laura getting it for her friend Alexa to say happy birthday or whatever it might be. And it's done super well during the pandemic because like gifting via kind of social is a really fun way of doing it, right? And you get these birthday shout outs or happy graduation, whatever it might be. So that's an existing product out in the world. That's a platform. We went and did the partnership work and all the legal and operations work to allow for a celebrity, when you go to his or her page, to have the cameos they do and fulfill not be a payment that's processed on cameo.com. It becomes a donation to BFP, Biden for President, via ActBlue. And all the operations backend happens to authenticate that the donation took place. And for that same $250 or whatever it might be, the celebrity then fulfills the request and wishes the happy birthday or whatever it might be, and gives a great kind of plug and shout out to the friend who made a donation to the Biden campaign for it. And the reason why, to me, this is a good example of a digital first platform is because A, the campaign, of course, is a fundraising tool that receives the donation and the contribution, which is great. B, the celeb, who is often, banging down our door looking for ways to get involved, especially when they can't go and join a rally like they would have in a traditional election year, meaning an in-person rally, can do them at home in their own spare time, right? Like 30 to 60 seconds at a time. And then C, the part to me that's arguably the most powerful from my standpoint, is all of the downstream earned impressions that we get from the gift recipient sharing it on their social feeds. Oh my gosh, check it out. I got this great shout out from X. So Cameo is an example of a platform. And again, very different from, say, Twitter as a platform in and of itself. So that's one. Another platform that we're working on is TikTok. But TikTok's one where it's interesting. We do not have an owned channel. And you may have seen kind of leaked in the press that we as Biden campaign staff do not have TikTok on our phones. There were some information security concerns. And so that means, therefore, we as the campaign from, again, like an owned channel aren't on there. So we're thinking a lot about how do we deploy a distributed creator-led approach to have a presence on TikTok, to have pro-Joe Biden messaging without the need for our principals, for our candidates to be on the platform.
I think you guys have done a good job. I think you guys, I mean, I see Biden stuff all the time. I'm also in the algo. I mean, I'm probably in the algo. But.
Right. You're going to get targeted what the TikTok thinks you want to see. But yeah, I mean, you're right. We've been measuring, obviously, across the board, the number of impressions or number of posts or, you know, for TikTok, it's also about like how often a piece of audio is used. That's kind of how things go viral on TikTok. So you can see how many times a piece of audio has been used and like kind of get a sense for how it's been growing. And yeah, we're happy that we've been able to make a big dent and get a lot of pro-Biden Harris messaging out there. So those are platforms.
That's another thing, Christian, that we want you to come back and talk about, because I think there is, right, again, the security issues or non-issues, but the perceptions with TikTok are huge in terms of that platform being able to scale and grow, and particularly at a time that's so critical, right, in the nation's kind of history. So it's a really interesting tidbit about not having TikTok on your phones.
Totally.
So thinking, Christian, about really at this point, 8 days away, what's the combination of data versus gut that you're using at this point? We talked with Lisa Sherman on our previous episode, President CEO of the Ad Council, the idea of speed over perfection, the fly swatter comes to mind.
The fly swatter.
I don't think there was any amount of data that you could have looked at. Maybe there was. In the amount of time it took to get from debate to having the fly swatter up on your website and available for sale. So talk to us about that dynamic and what you see as being the most effective under the tight timelines in which you're working.
We sold a lot of fly swatters, let me tell you. we sold a lot of fly swatters, and actually more than that, it was unbelievably impressive to see the Slack channel for all of the approvals to do something fly swatter related. And then subsequently, the amazing speed to find a union-made fly swatter. All of the merch in our Joe Biden store is union-made and printed. So not only were they able to just get it up live on the Joe Biden store as an item for sale, they had to source a union-made fly swatter in the first place, which is so impressive, and was able to be done. So I think on something like that, when you're in a rapid response or real-time environment, I think you're probably going to lean a bit more gut. And that probably is true when you think about the best-worst analogy of like Oreo dunk in the dark. There had to be some level of a gut call on what would be working for the brand voice of the company. And same thing here. There's a lot of real-time decisioning that takes place on something like that. We also use a whole host of data, as you shared. So there's a person on our team, for example, a woman named Allison Stern, who was the co-creator of and co-founder of Tubular Labs, which is a measurement firm. She works on the campaign and has really helped to infuse, and I give a shout out to Allison for this, has done a great job to infuse a data-driven approach for when we are signing partnerships with media publishers, with influencers, and has made available, again, like kind of her thinking around it. And so I guess the obvious answer is it's both, but I do think it depends a bit on what situation you're in, because you're probably going to skew a bit more one way and then skew a bit more towards the other side.
Speaking of that, Christian, you know, were there things that you guys had to make quick calls on that took you into unexpected or new directions? Were there things that, you know, you can't plan for some of these things? You couldn't plan for the fly. I mean, the fly was amazing. No matter what side you're on, it was just a kind of a crazy thing that happened. But were there things that from a bigger change that took you guys in a different direction, and what were they?
Yeah. I mean, I can even give you an example that is more on our side of the house, around the work that we did with Animal Crossing. The Animal Crossing work was not breaking news. This is not a deeply political, like Supreme Court fight kind of a high stakes thing. However, it was something that we worked on and created, I guess you would call it like almost an MVP, like a minimum viable product. It was yard signs. It's a native thing. People do it all up and down the board. And it has this almost lo-fi look, almost like grainy. If you don't know Animal Crossing, you'd think that it's like hard to read. And we thought that corners of the internet might really appreciate it, and that certainly people who play Animal Crossing and have their own island and really care about what it looks like would really appreciate it. And it would be a fun nod to the fact that this is an important user base and that people are spending time on Animal Crossing, and we really do want to meet people everywhere where they are, including on something like an Animal Crossing. And to answer your question, it was a piece of news and a piece of work that got such an outsized, real-time, super fast, positive reaction that we had to think pretty creatively and pretty quickly to put in plans in place for what we would do for a 2.0, and to make it clear it's not a flash in the pan activity. And we did. We launched the Biden Island and our field office with all sorts of Easter eggs and shout outs to and acknowledgments of Joe Biden's past and his interests, as well as Kamala Harris's. And the team that did the work did an awesome job thinking about what's native to Animal Crossing. And seeing the reaction in terms of the numbers, seeing the reaction in terms of even the tweets and whatnot, it's been awesome. So again, maybe a bit different from like a real-time tweet of how to respond to something happening in the real world or a geopolitical. But in terms of a digital partnership, it was something that we had to move pretty quick on.
I just feel like if more brands acted like they were in a presidential campaign, we would see a lot more innovation and a lot more willingness to say, doesn't need to be perfect. It's something we're going to MVP. We're going to get out there and talk to the far corners of the internet and see if they appreciate it. I just feel like that's a lesson that we can all take back.
What are your thoughts on seeing more individuals who work in media and marketing coming into the political marketing sphere, and what impact do you think that might have on future elections?
I think there will always be some number of operators or even some number of agencies who are whose agency services are used for the campaign, and that's been true for a while. People coming from maybe more of like my perspective, who are trying to do things a bit differently, I think that it's proven to be really powerful to have an outside voice. And I'll even tell you that some of the things that we're doing with digital publishers are not new, as in Christian is some innovation person. These are in some cases things that a Group 9 of the world does or has done for a little while. So it really is, in that case, just about pulling something from a totally different arena or outside of what people are used to hearing. And a lot of what we're doing is really great branded content from a number of BuzzFeed's individual channels. So branded content for BuzzFeed is a well-oiled machine, meaning they really know what they're doing and how to make it feel native. They are pros at this kind of social first and video stuff. When we are doing things with Perro Like, which is one of their pages that focuses on Latino audiences, and we're doing things with Tasty, which is their really popular food brand media publisher. And so what an approachable way for Dr. Jill Biden to talk about family and to talk about home and the importance of voting even. In the context of making, which they did, her world-famous chicken parm. It was great.
I love it. I want that recipe. I need to see that video. I think you just gave us a couple of really important nuggets, one of which Laura and I talk about a lot, right? It's not about the word innovation, which is just a weird, bad word that doesn't really mean a lot. And they don't think about how can you take something that's working and actually put it into a different context with a different audience. And all of a sudden, there's actually something kind of magical that happens for both the audience and the brand. So that is a great kind of message, because it's so critical to think about creating some tension between the context and the audience. It doesn't have to be net new.
And I love the idea, Christian, of what you're talking about in developing this partnerships team with inside political campaigns. Is really the cross-pollination of IP, right? Knowing what, you know, the campaign is best at, and then not necessarily having to create something net new, but going out and finding partners where that is their expertise, that is their skill set, that is their platform, that is their tech stack, whatever the case may be, and building on it. And I think that's something we've been talking a lot about on the show, is like double down on the thing you're best at, and then go and bridge these external partnerships and find ways to collaborate in new ways where 1 + 1 may equal 10. So with that, Alexa, I think we have a final question.
What is next? What is post next week for Christian Tom? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do?
I can tell you what's next, actually, in terms of the campaign, which is you're listening to this on Election Day. We will have just concluded a body of work that we're creating right now, which is what we're calling Project 72. It is the final 72 hours leading into the campaign and providing a really clean and clear scaffolding for people, individuals, influencers, creators, celebrities, people to help, quote unquote, kind of donate their accounts to this campaign. And we're going to give people really easy and hopefully really fun and compelling things to share on their social feeds, whether that's, again, vertical or square or every type of format you can think of, with a bunch of different aesthetics that you can go and put out on your channels. After that, meaning starting today, Election Day, we are also thinking a little bit about if we need to have the same help of people and influencers across the board in a scenario where this election is not determined on the night of November 3rd, tonight, when you're listening to this. So what's next is you may well be called upon, if you're listening to this, to help us make sure that the vote count period is happening and that all the votes are counted and that everything is tabulated in a way that means that everyone's voice is heard. So there is work between now and November 3rd, and there may well be work to be done together after that as well.
We're going to run into our final segment that we ask everyone to do. It's called Kill by DIY. So what would you, anything you want, what would you kill? What would you purchase or acquire? What would you do yourself? And it's a lightning round.
I have a irrational dislike of umbrellas. It's kind of a controversial take, but walking on New York City streets with trying to dodge umbrellas and yourself trying to put your umbrella down and not poke other people, I would love to just have everyone be running in between awnings or something instead. But that might not be totally feasible. But I would say kill umbrellas.
Umbrella's not that controversial. I like it. All right. What would you buy?
I would love to buy an iPad that did even more, because right now it actually is my main productivity machine. But I would love to buy one that could do even more than what it does now.
And Apple just released their new iPad. So uh-oh. I think you're in luck. And
oh, boy.
What would you do yourself?
We, like everyone else, have been doing a lot of baking, but we've also been doing a lot of cooking. So what I would love to learn how to DIY really well is more interesting dishes.
And Christian, if people want to send you recipes or get in touch with you about future collaborations or partnerships post-election, how can they get in touch with you?
I guess Twitter is probably best. On Twitter, I'm at CLTOM, CLTOM. So please hit me up. And I really appreciate both of you. And thank you for having me.
Christian, thank you so much. Good luck the next 8 days and beyond.
We hope you'll come back.
Yes, thank you.
We'll see you soon, Christian. Take care. Thank you so much. Alexa and I wanted to take a collective pause this election day and talk about turning busy into being. We're welcoming Kristen Mitchell, founder of Nourish the People. Kristen, welcome to Atlandia.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Would love for you to take everyone on your journey over the last few years in working in the health and wellness space.
Of course. Well, it's always a long story how people get really into wellness, deeply into this work. But I think with me, it really started way back when I was probably about 15 is when I started doing yoga. So yoga was my foray into everything. My mom did it as long as I can remember. So throughout my life, yoga has always been a constant. I moved to New York, very busy environment, had a lot of crazy jobs. And I realized over time that as I was dealing with more and more anxiety and more stressful situations, it was returning back to that practice and that room that I'd had since I was 15 that really kept me grounded and kind of sane. So eventually I hit a low point in 2016, ironically, 4 years ago, cycles, and decided that I just wanted to learn more about yoga, but beyond that, learn more about, I guess, why it worked for me. So I went deep into a 200-hour teacher training program. And then from there, it's just been kind of the rest of my life. That was really the first big door that opened and clicked in my mind. And spending that much time thinking about yoga, mindfulness, the background of it, the history, it really changed my perspective on how I behave, how I see things, and really how I live. So pause on that one. Around that same time, I was working a bunch of different random jobs because just pivot, you know, and I ended up meeting Laura. And that was another really big turning point for me because I saw something in you that I loved. And I also saw that there were so many aspects of what you were doing and the way that you were living throughout your day that could benefit from me being there to provide support from these teachings that I had been practicing for a really long time. So that's kind of where my wellness practice as an individual and my work, they kind of started to come together as one. And that eventually ended up informing Nourish the People in my mission now, which is helping really motivated, creative doers in this world who we really need. And there's so many of them. And especially in this time in particular, there's so many activists and entrepreneurs have to think differently and everyone's really being pushed. So I want to provide a platform and practices that are simple to help people always be able to return to their sense of calm, even in these very chaotic situations, because that's ultimately what I've been trying to do for myself and what I was able to do for Laura a little bit.
Let's talk about Nourish the People. Talk about building this brand.
Of course. Well, again, I mean, I kind of have you to thank for it, honestly, Laura, because as I was working with you and as I was working in an agency, and this was my first exposure to agency life, of course, we were working together today, every day on the regular, but then I was also in an office of just brilliant, brilliant people who are just churning and doing so much all of the time. So that kind of inspired something in me to think, how can I simplify all of this information that I have in my mind, all of this information about food? I've went to Institute of Integrative Nutrition. So there's that side, all of this information about mindfulness, about yoga, about breath work, about meditation, but simple it down to a point where it's not intimidating. There's not a barrier to entry, but rather it can be really graspable, really practical. And these creatives and doers can integrate these things into their life in little tiny bits every single day to make a difference. And I think that we are in this era of just doing, 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 going, going, going. So if I can even find an ounce, like 2, 3, 5 minutes of someone's day to kind of help them set a boundary or help them take a pause and make it not intimidating, then that's the goal. That's the mission.
So give us a few examples of that.
So the first thing that I'd say, and I preach this all the time recently, especially to myself, is when you are having a moment of complete overwhelm or anxiety or stress or whatever it is, don't fight it. I think we are also in this society where we really try to escape negative feelings and escape discomfort. And the fact of the matter is we're in a challenging time. Everyone's having a hard year, and these types of emotions and these types of feelings are just going to happen. So when you can sit there and just acknowledge what it is that you're feeling, just by acknowledging it, just by putting the verbiage around, not saying like I am anxious, but just saying I'm experiencing anxiety right now, that will help. Because what that does to your mind is it tells you, oh, I'm not actually attached to this. This is just something that's coming through me in this moment. And eventually, like all things, it will change. So that's my first number one tip right now, is just be very kind to yourself and have the wherewithal to acknowledge these hard moments and just say them for what they are. This is a hard moment. I feel really overwhelmed right now, but that's okay. because they change. It's the nature of our mind. It's the nature of emotions. It's always shifting. So number one, number two, everyone says it ad nauseum. You have to breathe. You have to breathe. Feel a full breath in and a full breath out and repeat that.
Can we just do that right now together?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, everyone, let's do this.
Okay, everyone. So wherever you're sitting, if you're sitting cross-legged, if you're sitting with your feet on the ground, I just uncross my legs and put my feet down. The first thing that you do is you notice your point of contact with the floor, because that feeling of gravity, that feeling of being supported will always calm your nervous system. It will always let you know that you're okay, you're held. If you're in the car, wherever you are, it doesn't matter. Just notice your seat. Notice the bottoms of your feet. Let the breath come out of your body. And then take a full inhale in through your nose. Ride the breath all the way down into your belly. Feel your belly expand. And then just exhale, let it go. There you go. That's number two. It works every time.
Instantly feeling better. Yes.
It instantly works. And it's so silly because it's so simple, but it always works. So that's my big thing. Number two that I would say. And then number three, which is actually, this is funny. It's popping into my mind right now. So I'm just going to go for it. Remember the moments that you felt really good. There's a lot of emphasis around even myself, like stress and anxiety, but I think it's important to have a note or a photo or something of a time when you just mentally felt really well, really on it, and just really good, really like yourself, and go back to that moment. Maybe close your eyes and just put yourself back in that headspace. Use your imagination. Notice what did you feel at that time? Just as a reminder to your body and to your mind that you can easily go back there.
As you've been building, have you recognized patterns with executives that you've worked with that have informed your services in terms of what you're offering through Nourish the People, both in the content of your newsletter, but also in the services that you're designing, be it yoga practice, coaching, meditation, et cetera? Have there been patterns?
There's always patterns. We're all kind of all cycling around many of the same things, just in our own unique ways. One thing that I notice a lot that I also personally deal with, of course, is perfectionism. This idea of needing to maintain all of these really, really high standards that we build for ourselves constantly. That's a big one. Another really big one is just generally lack of boundaries. There's a lack of boundary now, especially in homes, because you're working, you're doing everything from your space. So how can you help people adjust their physical environments and their mindset around their physical environments to create boundaries for themselves within their days? That's a really big one that I think a lot of people are working through right now. And another one that I want to say that's, again, a little bit cheesy, but you got to just hang with me, is just needing to be easier on yourself. Everyone gets really wrapped up and really stressed out in things that aren't going, things that aren't meeting expectations. And I think it's so important collectively across the board for everyone to just be gentle with yourself, be kind, no matter what you're doing right now, just recognize there's so, so much happening that that's one of the most important things that you can do.
So Kristen, I always hear that, like people always say, be kind to yourself, don't be so hard on yourself. And I always say, what does that look like? What does that look like? How do you do that? What does that mean?
A great question. Such a good question. It's another thing where you have to work on it. It does not come naturally. The nature of the mind is always to critique, to criticize, to overanalyze, to perpetuate bad situations as a way to protect us essentially from ourselves, from anything that could possibly happen. This is something I wrote about recently, where that's why I think it's important to understand that and befriend that aspect of your mind, because all of the negative self-talk, all of the anxiety, it's coming from a place of ultimate protection. Our mind, our body, they just want us to be safe. So it's trying to anticipate where we could go wrong, which is where we end up being really, really hard on ourselves, because we think about all the things that we could potentially do wrong or not meet expectations or ways we could potentially get rejected. So one of the ways to remedy that is to, first of all, get clear about where you're being harsh on yourself. Get crystal clear. That's always where I start. Understand what's the thought, what is the language, what is the fear, what is it that I'm beating myself up about, right? So get very, very clear and concise about the harshness. And then this is a new thing that I've actually been working on recently that I'll put out there because it was effective. Give yourself, or start, write down advice. If you think about, let's pretend someone else did the things to you that you're anxious about, that you're beating yourself up about. Your best friend just went and, you know, they messed up a presentation or whatever it is, and they're just beating themselves up about it. Sit down and write advice to them. What would you say to them in that moment right now to kind of help them feel better to a friend? Just write it and then sit there, read it, and give that advice to yourself and just take it in. Take your own advice. It's really interesting how we always know what we need. We always have the answers. You just have to slow down and ask the question. And then be willing to listen to it.
Kristen, I love that. It's super simple. I think it's just right. And one of the things that you talk a lot about is slow down. Mm-hmm. What can people do right now? Because we're not in an industry that's slow, ever. Mm-mm. We're actually the industry that's pushing the pace, right? So what can people do to actually use the energy, like take negative energy and take that push and take that speed and actually turn it into something that's propelling? Like, how do people start to think about that? Like, I know Laura really well. Laura knows me really well. One thing that we have in common is that we both work well, one, under pressure and with speed. In fact, when we're slower, we seem to get a little frustrated. How do we take that negative energy and kind of reframe it and push it into a creative place, push it into something that's going to help us?
So the first thing I want to touch on that I think is so important too, you said when you slow down, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
That is one of the key components that I am trying to kind of undo with people like yourselves, that slowdown time is so crucial to fuel the going time, the fast time, the under pressure time. So a huge practice, everything is a practice. I'll use that word in ad nauseum. A huge practice is recognizing when you're slow and being okay with the discomfort and knowing that the slowness is always a precedent prior to moving really quickly and moving into the doing, and that you will actually do so much better if you give yourself that time to be slow. You have to have both. You have to have both. It's the nature. You cannot always be doing, going, or you burn out, right? Burnout. That's all that is. So embrace the slow. Even if it's uncomfortable, just sit there and think, why am I so uncomfortable? What is this? And is there something that I could read? Is there something that I could listen to? Is there a way I could move, go on a walk to process this feeling throughout my body and make it feel okay? Feelings change.
Yeah, I love that feelings change. That's like such a understood, right? Thing that feelings are actually constantly moving. And typically when we're not feeling good, it feels like they're there forever.
What are the services that you're offering now as Nourish the People is in development to executives who may want to email you directly after listening to this episode?
Absolutely. Well, the first, I always have my newsletter. The newsletter is the core of Nourish, so you can always find me there. I also do one-on-one private sessions. I teach what's called yin yoga. So yin is slow. It is low to the ground. It is not entirely restorative. You move a tiny bit more, but it is just putting you into your body, really getting you into your body and breathing so that your anatomy begins to relax. And then along with the yin session, I do a short conversation just at the beginning. I help people focus in on one mental hangup, whatever it is, one stress, one anxiety, one thing that just won't shut up in their mind. And then we kind of move and meditate and do some visualization in accordance to that one hangup. And then I provide practices. I provide suggestions. What's one 2-minute thing you can do every day that could help you. I say 2 minutes and emphasize that because one of the things that I want to do with Nourish the People and working with executives in particular is I know time is so valuable and so limited, and oftentimes that's all that they have, but it's enough to make a really substantial difference. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this.
I would say, Kristen, that I know you offer up 2 minutes, but having worked with you, those 2 minutes easily turn into 20 minutes and in some instances, 2 hours. So to everyone listening, I think first stop, sign up for Nourish the People newsletter. It's at nourishthepeople.co. And Kristen, if people want to get in touch with you to talk about the practice, sign up for your services, how can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram at nourishthepeople.co. That's C-O. You can also email me, Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-I-N at nourishthepeople.co. That's also available on my website. I would love so much to talk to you. So feel free, slide into my DM, send me a note, comment on something. And I would just love to chat and hear about how you're doing and how you're handling this year. And if there's anything that I can maybe offer up to help.
I think that just even your presence, but your, you know, really smart advice is just something that, especially in this industry, we need more of.
Thank you so much for coming by and bringing some pause to this election day. We appreciate the conversation and you.
Of course. So happy to be here. Thank you too for having me.
So what an amazing episode. Feeling all types of push and pull, thinking about pace, the meaning of pausing to push forward, finding space to really think and create. And Alexa, there was also something you said in our conversation with Christian that really stuck with me. This idea of brands acting like they're in an election cycle and starting to connect some signals here, right? We heard from Lisa Sherman the idea of speed over perfection. We're hearing in this episode with Christian the idea of putting out a minimum viable product and building and iterating quickly if it lands. What do you think that this is signaling to brand marketers in which pace is moving faster and faster every day?
I think there's, you know, there's a new kind of emphasis that's been put on marketers around creating something new, always creating something new, and that there's value in that. What Christian said that I thought was so smart was it's almost like ready-mades. Does anyone know what a ready-made is? It's an art, right? You're using found objects and you're creating something new. Like there's something that is essential in a presidential election by using audiences, communities, things that are existing, media products, platforms, et cetera, that they put a spin on. And, you know, I think Christian really hit on it. And we've done this, Laura. We've talked about this a lot, even in season one and season two. How do you take a property, a partner, and collaborate and find where your brand and their brand is additive or an experience?
Additive, not adjacent is the line I believe we always used to use.
Exactly. Additive, not adjacent. And I think that Christian really hit on that. And brands, you know, election cycles are short. They're short for all intents and purposes, and they're high stakes. And I think if the brands start to think about themselves and their activity, their marketing activity like that, it will create collaboration over competition, which Lisa Sherman talked about. It will create new from already created. And maybe there shouldn't be a premium or the shiny object kind of requirement for a marketer. It should be, how are you looking at things that exist that are doing well, that you could use in a different way? Things that have community that you could enter into in a different way. And I think that was a big point that I got from Christian. He doesn't have time, right? They don't have time to build constantly something that's new, but they did.
I couldn't agree more. And I think there's two additional takeaways that I was left thinking about following that conversation was, one, incredibly important to go to where the consumer, or in this case, the voter is. You know, all of the partnerships that Christian was talking about, be it Cameo, TikTok, Animal Crossing, going to where the customer or voter is. I'm thinking about AOC showing up on Twitch.
That was awesome.
Going to where the customer or the voter is. And so, you know, that being one. The second that I took away, double down on the thing that you're best at and collaborate and cross-pollinate with others who are best at what they do and find ways to iterate and build versus having to continually build net new.
Yep, I agree. Totally agree.
In the market that we're in, I think it is extremely difficult to be everything to everyone. And so what is the thing that you own that you do better than anyone and then build partnerships within your ecosystem to allow you to iterate and scale?
And to do that, we need Kristen Mitchell to help us clear our heads, take a breath. Kristen's such a clear thinker. For me, you know, what's really interesting is, and we talked about this, we both have, let's just be honest, a hard time slowing down. But one of the things that I think, you know, Kristen said was this idea around slowing down actually allows you to speed up. And that was one of the probably most important things for me. And I can't speak for everyone. Laura, I can't speak for you. Lord knows. But today has been a highly anticipated day for me. I've been super anxious about it. I think.
Same.
Right? I know. We've talked about it. And I think it's really important that we all do what we have to do.
So with that, one last collective breath with Kristen Mitchell.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, everyone. Close your eyes. Feel your seat underneath you. Feel the bottoms of your feet. Take a big inhale through your nose. The breath moves all the way down through your throat into your belly. Big exhale. There you go.
Get out and vote. Laura hit it with the list of all of our friends and family at iHeart who have been so good to us and helped us get back on air.
Big thank you to Bob, Connell, Carter, Andy, Eric, Gail, Val, Michael, Jen. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedator. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.